Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're now listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 16. My very special guests, Dev from BBC Radio 1 and Rowan, aka from Don't Flop. As always, there's fuckloads of swearing, talk a lot of shit, and you know what? This episode might be really fucking long. I haven't edited it yet, so I don't even know. It could be long. Shout out to you for downloading. Shout out to everyone for continual support and reviews. Make sure you go onto iTunes or whatever it is you download your podcast on and go review and share that shit. Talk to people about it. Tweet me. Let me know what you're thinking. And on September the 17th, if you are in London, or even if you're around London, or if you're anywhere and you can fly to goddamn London, come to the Thanks for Trying podcast live at the Phoenix, starring Doc Brown and Asim Chowdhury, aka your buddy G. Big up Corrupt FM. Make sure you come down to that. Enjoy this episode. It's fucking incredible. Big up. All right. We're going to get straight into it. I'm The Last Skeptic, and welcome to episode 16 of the Thanks for Trying podcast with very special guests, Dev and Rowan from Don't Flop. Yeah.
Hey.
Hey.
It made it sound like we were both from Don't Flop.
That's it.
Dev from Don't Flop.
CEO.
And Rowan from nowhere.
Yeah. Dev and Rowan from Don't Flop.
So we were just about to talk about the...
the best thing on the internet.
The best thing on the internet. Which I only watched yesterday because I don't like watching things when, you know, then everyone's talking about them. Because, you know, I feel like...
Hipster.
Yeah, hipster. I don't want to be a conformist. Yes. So I wait a couple days
so
later
sad.
And then turn off all the lights in my room. Make sure, you know, that the phone's off. No one can find out.
I'm like that with television programs.
Yeah.
Like, I only watched The Sopranos in full like a couple of years ago. I wait for ages until it's died down. Yeah. But I think it's because I'm not into soaps or anything like that. Any sort of hip-hop, R&B, drama, beef, even if it's a really obscure rapper I've never heard of before, yeah. I'm all over that shit.
I need to know now.
I'll stay up late into the night looking at memes, extra videos, commentary.
I'm like that with Wikipedia.
Yeah.
With Wikipedia, yeah. I could tell you some shit about some random shit. But if you were like, you know, which order did Jay-Z release his albums, or like, who was the guy that did the track, The Real Slim Shady, I'd be like, I can't remember.
Yeah,
but if it's like, but I could tell you, like, you know,
I mean, surely that was Eminem.
That was the most ludicrous idea I could come up with.
Who did the song Still D.I.E.?
But I could tell you some like mad random shit about, you know, Malaysia or something. Yeah,
so
like,
as long as it's useless information,
yeah, because like, it's like that. Yeah, yeah, you just wait in it. You wait for the important shit, so, and the pointless shit you get involved in. Like.
So this Budden video, then, considering
what was a great segue.
Just said, this is sort of like, you know, there's a kind of pinnacle episode of a soap,
yeah,
every couple of years. So I don't know, in EastEnders it would have been when Kat revealed to what's her face, you're not my mother. yes I am. So this Joe Budden Migos video is kind of the equivalent of that. We'll be talking about it for ages. Mm-hmm. It's already gonna go down as one of the most classic bits. Are we gonna assume that there might be some people listening
always,
that haven't seen it?
Some people haven't seen it, yeah. You know, definitely explain. Like,
yeah,
I always like,
pause this and go and watch it.
So it's the BET Awards. It's a interview afterwards, or red carpet interview, would you say, on the side.
Right.
Migos. I was calling them Migos. Migos. Yeah, I don't
know. Some people call them the Migos.
Yeah, I find out.
You've seen that the occasional "the" gets thrown.
And
in
some people say it's because there's three of them, like three amigos.
Right. I'll just say it quickly.
Blew my mind.
Some people don't notice.
Migos. But yeah, so they're on. So they're doing this interview, and Joe Budden just fucking gives up because of what he says.
Do you think? Because this is how I read it. Okay, even though I like Budden and I like what Budden stands for. Even though it was a dick move, I still think that it was a little bit misinterpreted. What I saw it as is, all right, first off, Migos don't want to do that interview. Mm. Okay, they're not there for bants. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, the body language and everything, clearly that's not what they want to do. Academics tried to, I think...
He's the other host.
Win them. Yeah, he sort of tried to win them over.
Yeah.
And by the time he got to the line of... you're one of my favorite groups. I think that's what Budden was getting up and storming out over. But in doing so, like, I don't know, I've seen this so many times. I've like,
so many times. CSI this shit.
Do you notice when he gets up? I don't know which one of the Migos it is, but in doing so, he kind of like brushes past him quite aggressively sort of throws the mic down. It was a proper dick move for him to storm out in the middle of an interview. But I mean,
I think you don't see the full interview, but I think that throughout the interview, Academics have probably been just a little bit too greasy, you know what I mean? Just a little bit too nicey to them, and then
that being said, just to be devil's advocate though, do you not think it was on Joe Budden's behalf still disrespectful that you have, whether you like it or not, the biggest hip hop act sat there, and you got a chance to interview them, regardless of whether they want to be there, whether they don't want to be, you owe them a certain amount of respect.
Imagine if you did that on TV, man. Like, don't be fucked.
Right.
Like, you'd only ever do it if the guest was being mad offensive or saying some shit that you're like, I just can't, politically, I can't get with this. You're being, like, racist or whatever. Mm-hmm. Fine. But these guys were just like, you know, they just didn't care about being there. There's no reason to be angry.
Yeah.
You just be like, listen, let's just wrap up the interview. Thanks a lot. Cool.
The funniest part, though, is certainly how I interpreted it. It's the moment where the Migos stand up.
The Migos.
And I don't know which one it is.
they form like Megazord. The Migos.
The Migos.
They form the Migos sword.
It's almost, it's like it's been staged. It's so beautiful. The way they all stand up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know which one of it is. Goes to sort of tuck in his flowery blouse that he's got on. Yeah. And to me, it's this amazing
flowery
meeting of...
That was a shot. Like, that was the first shot.
It is. It's a silky blouse. It's a glamour. It's a gorgeous one. Don't get me wrong.
A wonderful
blouse. I'll probably be wearing something quite similar like this summer, but it's a gorgeous blouse. To me, it was just, as they stood up, it was this amazing meeting of I don't want to call it old school hip hop, but certainly an era of hip hop where lyricism was super important, and then you have the popular guys who might not be, you know, certainly lyrical, but it looks so different from this is within the same culture is these two meetings of opposing sides together, like the Capulets and the Montagues. It was this beautiful facial
experience. I feel like you've gone slightly too far. To be honest.
And as you know, this sort of the standoff as they waited for security to intervene, right?
As they waited. Beautiful. Yeah, that was so. It definitely wasn't like the Source Awards back in the day. It wasn't like East Coast, West Coast beef, which, you know, in one sense, people are going online going, oh, isn't it beautiful that rappers don't kill each other anymore? Isn't that such a wonderful thing?
You don't want to see anyone get killed.
Exactly. Yeah, but we still have to watch this shit. Yeah. Like, surely just fucking talk it out.
Highly entertaining, though. Yeah. Either way you want to interpret it.
I think it's also important to note that, like, a lot of people have no idea of his history as a rapper.
Yeah.
Like, Pump It Up is still a fucking tune.
Classic.
Like, it's a classic, and it's forgotten. It's almost like the same way that with Dre, people go, oh shit, that guy that makes headphones makes music. You know, people forget.
That's offensive as fuck.
Yeah, no, but people forget that, like, you know, and I think at our age as well, it's just mad that, like, it has been recontextualized and everything.
A lot of people who watch the show now probably don't even know who he is.
He's become a coach.
Two ways that I feel like that situation there was interpreted, and the little Yachty one as well, is it felt like if you were a long time fan of hip hop, you saw that as somebody standing up for the core values of what hip hop is based on, that these new wave artists, they're not about lyricism. It is very much based on hype. But how a lot of younger people saw it is that Joe Budden's coming across as bitter and he's not. I always feel like it's up to the older, the peers to embrace whatever's.
Yeah.
I don't mean accept any old bullshit, but He's a kid at the end of the day.
Exactly. They are kids.
Yeah. And also, do you know what? Joe Budden is probably about 20 years older than me.
Yeah. Right?
And that is insane.
Even as someone that, like, I've been involved in all varieties and styles of hip hop, whether it be ignorant or fucking whatever people call conscious, all that shit, I embrace it all, man. I think it's all, I DJ it all, I fucking love it all. If you look back at when hip hop started, the lyrics weren't very complicated. Like, hip hop, hippie, come on, like Sugar Hill Gang, you know, before then, like, it was very simplistic. It was about a vibe. It was about the way that they manipulated their voice in order to make it sound good and to get a crowd moving. And I don't think that's a million miles away from Future, who now, compared to Migos and Lil Yachty, is considered like, but you know, Rakim. So.
Isn't the difference, though, that
Lil Yachty 100% does not know who Rakim is?
But that's what I was just about to say. It's
funny, though.
The difference
cares?
Is that,
why not, mate?
That new wave, whatever you want to call it, they haven't really studied the game. They don't sort of pay homage in the same way that you might have to your peers.
Do you know why that is, though? Because the fans they're going for don't require you to pay homage to the game.
And also, they don't even know that they existed.
Like, they've born Lil Yachty fans are not going to not like Lil Yachty because he can't tell you what who Grandmaster Flash is. They don't care.
Exactly.
They don't care. So why should he care? He's trying to make music for them. Why should he be any different to what they're like?
Yeah. And they've been born into a world where rap is the biggest thing in the world and they don't have to fight for airplay like we used to 5-10 years ago, where rap would be also sectioned into 2 hours on a Friday, Saturday night, you know,
fighting for airplay, but also however corny it sounds, fighting for acceptance as a fan of rap.
Yeah,
like you had to really
pay dues.
Yeah, you had to really pay dues. And also a lot of people were incredibly reluctant to consider your music taste serious if you're into hip-hop. I'm sure it's different in America, but I'm saying over here, if I go back to, you know, when we were like 15-16, it wasn't the same way you see these 15-16 year old kids. And you know, that's when I get a bit bitter. Like, the only time I feel bitter is, damn, like, you don't actually realize how lucky you are that you now, as you said, you're growing up in an age where the coolest people you could listen to is Kendrick Lamar, all these kind of people. It was never cool when we were teenagers. It was like the extra thing you listen to. You know, be like, oh, do you like Oasis? Yeah, but I kind of like this other thing. You know, have you heard of Outkast? yeah but next question, like, do you like it was niche. It was always like, which bands do you like, which drum and bass DJs do you listen to? It was never, oh, who's your favorite rapper?
You also never want to be, I don't want to be that generation as well that's, oh, when I was your age, our music was much better than this. I do like to embrace all sides. Like, I can listen to something conscious, I can listen to the most ignorant shit ever, but I think maybe the difference is I have a bit of contrast.
You
know, I can take it a little bit more at face value, whereas when I see my nephew like rocking to Young Thug or something, I wonder, oh fuck, he's got nothing else to compare this to him this is the most amazing thing. He's got nothing else to back
you
out.
You said that Young Thug isn't the most amazing hip hop artist of all time, because that would make you a hater.
You're totally right. I just don't want to be that old guy judging the kids on like on what they should or shouldn't be listening to, because that's no different from the older people going, DMX, what the fuck is DMX? He's barking. And I had so many people like that to me, and I'm like, you don't understand, you're not an angsty teenager wanting to hear DMX and a grown man barking on a record. I want to hear that.
Also what's great and such a piece of misinformation is how many of these stereotypical, you know, let's be honest, most people will refer to them as purists. I refer to them as
purists,
you know. I was trying to be, you know, because you probably know a lot more of them than I do, like, and you're like probably the one that's always like, guys, you need to listen to other stuff. With those kind of purists slash wankers slash bitter people, whatever, I think one of the biggest misinformation they put out there is that this idea of back in the day when hip hop started, it was all about baggy jeans and New Era caps. If you look back in a day, no, mate, it wasn't. If you look at Grandmaster Flash and those LP covers, they were some homoerotic
some chaps
piece. They were in some shit. They were in some Rick James shit. And I'm not even saying that's bad, but I'm saying like, that's where hip hop came from. Hip hop came from this funky, soul-y, skin tight, rigid, George Pryor, Pinner, weird, mad shit like this. But yeah, you always hear people saying, I can't, you know, they'll post like a picture of Young Thug wearing skinny jeans. And I'm like, is that really, does that bother you that much? I'm not saying, I think you could pick issues with Young Thug as a rapper, but like people are losing sleep over him wearing ripped jeans and glittery tops and stuff.
Controversial for me to say, but I also think that a lot of it is to do with the white people's attitude towards what they think a black person or a black rapper should look like to them.
Yeah. That's on, but I reckon that's on both sides.
I think that's just as much black people's attitude towards what they think black people should.
There's still that stigma of it's not really okay to be black and gay,
right?
And certainly not in hip hop.
Yeah,
I mean, there's so many different ways you could break down that hip hop in a lot of ways is homoerotic, right? It's normally a lot of questionable lines. But as far as
if Biggie had said to my face, "I'll suck your daddy's dick," I'd been like, bro, my daddy does not want his dick sucked by you or anybody else for that matter right now.
But then there's also, again, I'll probably read more up on this shit than I probably should do, but you must be aware that there's this conspiracy that
There's
an agenda somehow to that they want hip hop artists to be gay. That there's like
to demasculate.
I was gonna say they refer to it as the feminization of black men.
Right. There's that old Chappelle.
It's one of the stupidest things I've ever
heard.
That
old Chappelle clip, right, where he says, you know, to make it in Hollywood.
Yeah,
apparently, like there's that thing. If you're a black man in Hollywood, in order to make it, at some point in your career, you have to put on a dress. You have to.
Wow.
And you know, you look at Martin Lawrence and Eddie Murphy and Tyler Perry and stuff.
Yeah.
And there's. I certainly wouldn't. It is ridiculous. I wouldn't agree with it, but you have to at least accept that it's like flat Earth, for example. You have to at least acknowledge a lot of fucking people feel that way.
And I just don't understand why that flat Earth thing. Just like it's like voting.
Sorry,
it's like,
jump.
Oh god! No. It's good, man.
How long we got?
I've got like the flat Earth thing. Just,
are we all agreed around the table at least that the world is
the world is flat, right?
Yeah,
cool. Yeah, we all agreed.
I can't believe
flat.
We all just tried to make the same joke. I was thinking they're all going to say round and I'm going to say flat and it's going to be really funny. Like, and you literally, I took a fucking sip. I got too cocky and took a sip of my drink and you both said the joke first.
Say it on three.
Fuck's sake. Great
I'm
minds.
I'm so used to being the only funny one. Oh, like I just don't understand. It's like people who voted Tory. I don't understand how that could genuinely be a thing that seriously thinking humans can do and believe. Like,
but,
I don't know.
But see, I've had this conversation nearly every day since because two of my closest boys vote Tory.
Oh.
Yeah, but this
right. So I thought you were gonna say flat.
Earth. Flat Tory. Like, no. This is a crazy thing.
Can I ask you this though? Do they make a lot of money?
They don't make a little money. Yes.
Right.
They very clearly vote Tory due to money issues. Yeah. But it's just a crazy thing because what you were saying about you can't see how someone could vote it, but like, you know, but one of these dudes I was with literally yesterday and he was sitting there, you know, giving me the best business related talk I've had in probably fucking all year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And I was sitting there thinking, the last time I saw you, we were arguing about what, because I just, you know how it is when you vote Labour, you just assume the whole world votes Labour.
Because we're in a bubble.
Yeah. So I think it was the last time I saw him was a couple of weeks ago and they started making so many jokes about Jeremy Corbyn. I suddenly started saying, wait a minute, oh, you're actually being serious. You're voting Tory, aren't you? They were like, yeah, I can't believe you vote Labour. We've voted Tory our whole life.
Fuck.
Mad, isn't it? And but I'm saying, but then, this is why I do see both sides of the coin because, you know, as I said, they've been these two people, they live together. They've been two of my best friends for a long time and they're very, very supportive. And it's like, it does show that there is people who vote Tory that aren't just cunts. Like, fair enough, they like, but that's how you see
that's
it.
That's the next slogan, right?
I know, that's it. Don't worry, we're not all cunts.
Say, you know, that
is on the back. But I think
it's just scary to me. He sat there with me and he was offering, you know, so much advice on this is what you should do with your business. This is where you should take it. This is the help I want to give
you. But if you wanted free healthcare because you were ill, then he'd be like,
he's
no.
Just like,
then you should die.
You better wear
slowly.
A hard hat wherever you're going because nothing's happening.
Exactly.
So it was a shame. Yeah, and so, but I'm just saying, you know, that I know a lot of my friends, probably maybe you're the same, know absolutely nobody that votes Tory. So I find it kind of interesting that I do know people that vote Tory.
Because you get to see and also ask questions.
And they're not just aliens, they're real people and they don't vote it because, you know, I know them. They're not voting because they're scared of an imaginary illegal immigrant. They it may be selfishly just for money reasons, but it is at least a reason that's, you know, business orientated, not just like fact. I hate other human beings. Like,
certain life experiences though can create a little bit of a cutoff to what's real.
Yeah.
Like, so I had this moment, the first time I ever flown business class last year, I did this like business class thing to Australia. And
oh, that's a good one. Have you ever flown business class?
No,
never.
Like, honestly,
I never wanted that to end.
It's the shit. Yeah, I'm not even joking. It was the best part of the whole trip.
Isn't it like 3-4 times more expensive than normal flights?
Well, I didn't. Obviously, they picked up.
Oh,
they
picked I just thought you fancy balling out. No. I thought you were like, never. Just got would, your surfboard and fucking.
No, I'd never ever pay. It was a work thing, yeah. And they paid for the flights and stuff. And it was with there's two different airlines, Middle Eastern ones. It's not Qantas, it's the other one.
Qatar?
That's the one, yeah.
Qantas isn't your Middle East, that's Australia, mate.
Oh, snap.
See, that's right. That's some tourist shit. That's some tourist shit. It begins with a queue, so a couple brown people fly on it.
So I had this moment in business class, first time I ever flown. You can put your seat all the way back, whatever. And I was sat up in the aisle, and then I could see through to economy. Mm. And they had a little bit of they had the curtain that separates economy and business class. And I noticed there's two different types of people in business class. There were everyone who does this all the time, and they're like, oh, whatever, fucking yes, it's just whatever. Then there's people like me, like, oh, fucking hell, this is nice, isn't it?
Still everything.
Trying to hold it down, though. So I'm like, yeah, I do this all the time. And then I'd only been in business class for about 10 minutes. I sat there, and I looked through to economy, and I remember thinking quite distinctly in my head, I remember thinking, hope they're going to close that fucking curtain. Wow. Don't want anyone looking back in. I was in there for 10 minutes and it already changed me. I'd already started to feel like...
Is that because of the guilt?
I'm better than those people back.
Yeah, all right, not because of the guilt.
Bring me another hot towel. And that was... Just based off,
you're not even talking to the stewards, you're talking to the people in the economy. Bring me your towel from economy. Bring me every towel.
That's it.
If you don't have a towel, bring me your child.
So I can totally understand that your friends, based on what their life experiences might have been, if they're seeing like voting for Tory is beneficial for somebody in that situation, I can 100% see how you'd be swayed.
But it's still wrong. It's morally wrong. It's morally fucked up. Like to think that those people who have, because even, there's a lot of people I know in the city that are now completely changed their view and they're all voting Labour. Which I'm not saying that's to do with their morals.
It's to do with JME.
JME. They're all Grime fans.
Yeah.
But
that's amazing. Try to say to someone 15 years ago, when like Pulse X dropped, you'd be like, in a few years' time, all right, Grime will be so big it's going to influence an election.
Imagine if when Pow drops, there's like an extra verse on Pow that's just rapping about Corbyn.
Sick. Never would have thought that.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. Like, I played at Grime for Corbyn. That was a fucking amazing event. Yeah.
The thing in Brighton?
No, there was one in Tottenham.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, it was sick. I went out, I did a set with Screwfizzer jamming and Maxter, and it was fucking sick.
Did Corbyn show up to you?
No, he couldn't be there. I went to another event, though.
Why couldn't he be seen there?
No, he couldn't be seen to be associated with the frat. That was the same day as his, I think, his rallies. He had rallies up and down the country. And
so, no, the only thing that upset me about that whole campaign, because right at the end, you must have seen it going around. Did you see the failed Corbyn high five?
Bless
why'd you have to put
him.
That?
The titty someone, touching.
This should have been a smear campaign to like just sort of take that out, man.
Yeah.
It's something, I don't know if you guys ever worry about this or not. I get real anxiety about when you go in for a handshake with somebody.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways you can fuck it up. And then it creates so much awkwardness for me. And so I always wait for somebody else to kind of initiate it.
Oh, do you know the worst one? Because I'm not even going to go into how much I understand what you're saying, but I'm just going to say I get you. And like the worst one for me is when, people are all us three, like we spend a lot of time, hip hop related events and stuff, so where people do these kind of slightly fancy handshakes, right? So you get to know what handshakes certain people do, right? And you kind of remember it like their face. Yeah. You're like, oh, he's the guy that does this. You know, the most frustrating one is when you go to shake somebody's hand that you assume is not really from that scene. So you try do just a, I'm a 40-year-old white businessman handshake and we've just clinched the deal. That kind of one. And then they try to turn it into some shit. Yeah. And then you look like the square because they've, and then you can feel it because they're awkwardly fumbling around your hand. And you're thinking, I second guess myself too much. I should have just done what was natural to me. I should have dapped them up. And I went for this basic bitch handshake. And it's, oh, it's and I, the thing is, I think about that shit for hours.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it in a business setting.
I have to go fucking wash my hands, burn my fingertips off, like, bro, all that shit.
I'll tell you the exact one.
There's no
yeah.
coming back from that.
I saw an interview. I don't know why I remember this. It was on World Star Hip Hop, right? And it was a random interview with Loaded Lux and Fat Joe, and they were just talking shit. And at the end of the interview, Fat Joe was like, you know, oh, massive respect to Loaded Lux, and they shook hands. And I always remember when I watched it, for days after, I was like, how did they both know they were going to do that same handshake? Because yeah. it wasn't. And you see, listen, you see what I'm saying? When I tried to say, I'm not going to go in.
Awake at night, staring at the ceiling.
You see what I said? I'm not going to go into how much I understand. I was like, that's a tiny percentage.
What type of handshake was it like?
It was like, right, let me show you. It was like, okay. It was like this.
Yeah.
And then like that.
Yeah.
And then like that. Which is quite normal, right?
That's a three step.
Yeah, threes. It's threes. But I've done that exact one with people. Yeah. But I wouldn't, you know, say, I wouldn't just walk in the room like I walked in now and assume that all you
lot
of
course.
Shit.
No.
But I'm saying, I was just thinking, before they turn the camera on, did Fat Joe say, hey, yo, man, like, so basically, like, I'm gonna go up, down, and then across.
Yeah. That's it.
And it's like, this was like 3 years ago, and I still think about it now. If I met Fat Joe, I'd probably be like, one, I'm a big fan, two, do you remember that interview you did?
Yeah, that's it. Great handshake.
Great. Your technique was
Here's a series notch, of bro. Diagrams and graphs that I've made about that day.
TV shows, I think the same shit. On TV shows, I see them, I'm like, did they plan that before they turned before the scene? Did they think,
they
say
have
that
to
was,
talk about.
I've been rewatching The Wire recently, exactly the same thing.
I've been studying. You,
bro, so yeah, just for my master's in handshake.
I just hate going in for like the dap and then people are like, you know, and then they end up shaking your clenched fist. And I'm like, that's just,
God, that makes you feel
that's
sick.
That's really awkward. I lived in New York for a couple of months when I was 15, and they used to have this sort of like triple dap thing going on.
Yeah.
But some people only do two. So sometimes you go for two, and then they put their hand back down, and you're kind of left like, whoops, and you rip down your light. Trying to do that. One.
Collateral damage.
Yeah, there's no like universal handshake. Yeah. But then say
no, that.
Yeah, we need to decide like once and for all.
Do you know the other one that fucks me up, bro, is when you shake someone's hand, they haven't cut their fucking nails.
Yeah,
bro.
That's gross.
Do you know how much you get at a battle rap? That is like a running joke at battle rap events.
That when makes it's just me cringe.
I'm telling you, bro, it's a running joke. Oh, after every event, cringe. I'll sit there in, you know, someone's apartment or my house or whatever, and I'll be looking at, you know, just the top of the palm of my hand, and I'll be like, I have actual stab wounds in my hand from just cut lazy. Man, fat shit. Battle rappers who can't be bothered to cut their fingernails before an event.
Wow.
Every event I have before the event, I cut my nails because I'm like, I know I'm going to be shaking probably about 80, 90 people's hands.
Yeah, and you don't want their skin.
I take hand gel, everything.
You don't
bro.
Want that happening.
Oh, mate, are you kidding me? I had stab wounds in the palm, mate. That sounds like a fucking Slipknot song. I'm serious. Like, there, bro.
I had a runner on this TV show that I was doing, Meet Me Outside in a Cab. And he was like, you know.
Was
like,
that the name of the TV show?
Meet Me Outside in a Cab. That is like, a sick TV show.
Meet Me Outside.
And he met me with a dap, right?
Yeah.
He opened the door and sort of met. And the thoughts I kind of went, all right, initially, I'm not going to lie, I wanted to kind of smack the hand out of the way and be like, come on, shake my hand like I know you've shook everybody else's hand.
Yeah.
But you think it was because he saw your black thing? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't feel like I carry myself in that way where I walk into a room and I'm like, yo, what's up there? I'm just like, yeah, I want to shake everybody else's hand. It's not like you're my boy and I've known you for a really long time.
Are you implying
time.
That all black people say, yo, what's up, man, when they walk in the room?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And if any point I'm going to make, it's gonna go through today. That's gonna be it. No, but it makes me cringe because it makes me feel like, oh, is he trying to validate? Oh, he knows what's up, sort of thing. And is it the equivalent of dropping, I don't know, a lyric from some bespoke album or whatnot? Yeah. Like I want to tell people that I already accept you. You're already on neutral when I meet you until you do something otherwise. Mm. But by doing that, you're now on minus one, mate. So,
bro. That's true,
bro. There was a time I remember I was in a pub in New Cross, and it was the opposite. I thought, right, because I fucked up so many times trying to be too simple, I'm gonna make this one complicated. And you know, fair enough, racial stereotype, but it was my friend's mate. He was quite a lanky white geezer, you know, little Burberry jacket, collar turned up, whatever. So I was thinking, all right, we're gonna see what you can do handshake wise, because you're gonna be expecting.
Let me see what you're working with.
Like, you're gonna be expecting the basic bitch handshake.
Yes. He took the Fat Joe school of handshaking.
And I thought, right, instead of underselling myself and you know, underestimating this dude. I'm going to assume he can adapt.
Mm.
And then, so I did this, maybe it was a 2-move one or a 3-move one. And I swear down in the most condescending way, he didn't think I could hear him, but I did it. And as you know, we like released our hands or whatever, he turned to his friend and was like, "Ooh, fancy." Like that. And I was just like, no, man. He said, and it wasn't like, "Oh, that was really cool." It was a proper condescending, like, "This guy thinks he's super cool because he's just popped up." And it was in like a beer garden. And I was like, "Yeah, you think he?" So then I was like, "Fuck." So now I tried to be too cool, and now I look like this wanker trying to be too cool. So I kind of deserve it.
I think the only way around it is just to have no hands. I think that's you just cut your hands off.
Or did Eskimo, like the nose.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
The problem solved.
Oh, that's a kiss.
That'll be less awkward. It's just rub noses.
Imagine if when I walked in the room half an hour, goes, "What, Grant, then? What are you saying, Jim?" Nose.
Oh, okay, we're doing this. Okay. I get very awkward on other people's behalf. And for me to have done anything other than reciprocate the, okay.
So how is it? Because you obviously interview a lot of famous people, a lot of, you know, singers and actors and whatnot. How awkward does it get with some of these people? Because I'm guessing some of them are fucking like terrible with their social skills.
Yeah.
So first off, who has the best handshake?
Who has the best handshake? Who has like a really... Danny Dyer has a really firm handshake.
Nice.
I can imagine.
You wouldn't expect anything less, really.
Like, yeah, exactly.
And he like proper looks you in the eye. He also disarms you quite quickly. So I'm sure that there's some...
Is that a pun? That sounded like a handshaking pun, so I was just like, throw it out.
No, you know, like, for example, sorry, he'll shake your hand a bit, I did, and you're like, "Treacle." He sort of called you a female pet.
Yeah.
And straight away, you're a bit,
exactly. Oh, my God.
I mean, I don't consider myself an alpha at all, but he has out-alphaed you before you've even got off into a conversation. He sort of very much put you in your place. Now, he's got a good handshake, but for the most part, you're interviewing people who have probably been on the circuit, either promoting a film, really sick to death for talking about something, been asked the same questions over and over again. You're just a list of endless faces. Yeah. So I try and ask something a little bit different. Mm. And you often see that the second you try and take it away from, "So tell me about your new film," and you see them kind of, but yeah, things do get a little bit awkward, only because I quite like to take it there. I like pregnant pauses.
And because you were saying that some before we went on air that some people don't know whether you're taking the piss or not, or whether you're being serious.
It always takes at least two questions into it. I interviewed that Samuel L. Jackson a couple of years ago, right? And I got told, it's a really weird setup. You go to a hotel, there's probably about 50 other journalists that are going to go and interview him, and you get given 10 minutes. So, right, you got 10 minutes with him. And as I walked in, his assistant said, "Just so you know, Mr. Jackson is about to have lunch." I was like, okay, I didn't really know what that meant. And I walked in, sat down, asked him a question. The first thing he did was take a massive bite of his sandwich and then start asking me through bites. Like, okay, I'm not going to be able to use any of this. Because I thought he'd anticipated, all right, this is just going to be a joke, so interview. But I'd come prepared. I asked him some, I can't remember now, I've like dashed my notes. But I came with like some really cool questions about a lot of the early films he's made and the fact that I didn't know this beforehand, but he's made at least one or two films every single year for the last 30 years or something like that.
He started late as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Do the Right Thing, you know.
Yeah. Same with Morgan Freeman. Morgan Freeman is it's the same thing.
It's a late bloomer.
People only remember him being old because he has only ever been old in film. Like I think his breakthrough, he was 50 or
some
something.
Say he was never actually young in real life.
Benjamin Button. But as soon as he saw that I was asking him proper questions, he wiped his mouth, finished what he was eating, and then, but yeah, I feel like maybe a lot of them, they're quite sensitive people, aren't they? Actors and singers and performers, I think they're always anticipating you're either going to take the piss or you want to catch them out. But it's never been my thing. I never want to try and make somebody look
stupid. Was this TV or radio?
Both. Deal with some very, very sensitive souls.
Yeah,
the worst are the like reality ones, man, because they've got this sort of air of, you know, like someone who's on death row or something.
Yeah,
it's like everyone in the room knows it. They know it.
Yeah.
You're 50 minutes and nearly out, sort of thing. Kind of milk this for all it's worth.
I'm now just picturing like a version of Jersey Shore, but on death row. Like the most high budget
reality show based
on death row ever.
It's not a bad
death row island. How many years are we off a reality show where someone dies at the end of every episode?
Well, there's supposedly one they've just done in Russia that was like that, basically, where they left a load of people out in the, like 50 people, they left them out in the woods or some shit for like a year. Yeah. Supposedly there was mad shit was going on. going on. People died. Wow. This out. Yeah, man.
Just give them no help.
Literally, just like load of GoPro cameras and shit. It's fucking insane.
I would kind of like to do that.
Yeah, that'd be sick.
You know those like Bear Grylls shows?
We got four people in this room. That's enough for a TV show.
Like, just to know. Just to know if it actually kicked off, would I be all right?
When it kicks off. Yeah,
when the zombie apocalypse, would I be right? Because I worry about it all the time. I worry that I don't have any discernible skills. If
Can you make a fire? Because
nope.
I can't.
Nope.
I can't do that. I'm from Finsbury Park.
You heard of this guy, he's got a channel called Primitive Technology.
No.
It's just him, he just makes stuff out of, he makes an axe out of some wood and shit. He makes a little heart. He makes clay tiles and he never speaks. Like 11 minute long videos, and he puts one out every 3 months. It's him making his own charcoal and like a hut with a heated floor.
How do you make charcoal?
Never send it. Well, you burn wood in a mound and then you put out the fire and then you cut off the oxygen to it or something. It draws out all the moisture. Yeah. Anyway, I watch these videos in total, silence and just watch it. And it's something about watching somebody use mud and clay and build this. You know, you've built something with your hands. There's that very real disconnect that we have with stuff like that. Like nature, like I said, like when it does kick off.
Yeah, when.
I don't know. I wouldn't even know. As soon as your food runs out and now you've got to rely on nature, I wouldn't know what the fuck to do.
No. I often think that when I've just been shopping, like when I've just packed all the cupboards in the fridge, I always think, this would be an all right time for something. Yeah. You know, everyone has that in it when you're like,
I've got 18 tins of chickpeas. Yeah. I'm good.
Do you have a plan? Good. Have you set a plan? So like,
look, I've got a plan for the zombie apocalypse, right, okay, but not necessarily any other apocalypse. All right,
let's say it's zombie apocalypse. It's Walking Dead style zombies. None of this fucking running, jumping over No. Proper zombies, right?
Yeah.
Which zombies are jumping?
Like in 28 Days Later.
Yeah, they're fucked up.
I Am Legend and shit. They're quite jumpers.
Like a traditional zombie. Okay,
cool.
What's
lethargic zombie?
So, announcement's just gone on. There's been an outbreak, central London. They say 60,000 people affected, running around biting people, whatever. So it's gonna get soon. What's like the plan? First thing.
Well, straight away you have to board up your windows and doors.
With what?
Well, with whatever you can find.
You in this room, you haven't got enough to board up windows.
Look at that. I've got a record case that I can dismantle.
You wouldn't do that.
Yeah, I thought you meant the vinyls. Apart. I was thinking you would fuck
the vinyl.
Double glazing. Double glazing, you might be all right.
Yeah.
A zombie ain't getting
I've got bars on the windows downstairs.
Right.
So I'd have to block the door and then go probably booby trap downstairs with oil. So if they do break in, I can set fire to the bottom floor.
Zombies and Home Alone. That's good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Also, I have to make sure that I'll probably buy a machete at some point.
No, you can't buy a machete.
I've got some sharp knives.
Right now.
I would
100% say we're finishing this fucking podcast.
Hit pause.
Rap be like, goddamn. Do you know how much that fucking Uber cost me, bro? When I saw the price of that Uber, mate, I was like, this better be a decent podcast. I better have a couple laughs. I better get a couple jokes. I was thinking, I'm going to make that flat earth joke and it's going to bang. And I was thinking, if it kicked off right now and there's a zombie at the door, I'd be like, obviously we should sort something out, but I want to then come back and finish. 100%.
Finish the podcast, yeah.
Because it'd be you'd have so much to talk about.
I know.
Or maybe we wouldn't. Maybe it'd be like, shit, we think this is a massive topic.
Get a zombie on. Fuck it. Like, get their opinion. No, I would just be ready with the knives, man. You've got to be ready with. I've also got my bike. So that's the instant transport.
I've read the zombie survival guide.
Yeah, same.
Right? So it's good reading. No, good say reading. First step is fill up the bathtub. Fill up the bathtub water. Think about it. It's one of the first things you need, isn't it? Fresh water.
Yeah, of course.
Clean water.
Oh, bathtub. Fuck.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
So now this podcast has now become a public service announcement.
It's true.
So
and also welcome. Get wrap your arms in like fucking newspapers and all that shit so that you can go in for close combat and all that. I only learned after reading the zombie survival card, I couldn't ride a bike. But I learned how to ride a bike because I was afraid of zombies. But
you learned because after reading a zombie
survival guide? Yeah, because it was, it's the quickest way away from zombies.
Yeah?
Okay, here's my question though. How can you make a zombie survival guide when the concept of a zombie is just something that people have made up?
They say though, isn't they, that there's a brain parasite. There's a real life brain parasite that does exist. Yeah,
that noise you made does, makes me think you're the first one that's going to transform.
It was true because there's ants in it. There's ants, the fungi that takes over ants.
A brain parasite.
There is a brain parasite that can make somebody exhibit the
traits of a zombie. It is a likely, if we say that a zombie outbreak is most likely going to be a biological weapon style attack, right? Then or it is, nature. Then it is feasible. What I most be worried about, not zombies, mate, it's people.
People,
innit?
Yeah.
We wouldn't be able to handle something like that. In a city, within 48 hours, we will be murdering each other 100%. In the streets over a fucking box of cornflakes.
The first place, I'd say, the first place to go would be JD, Foot Locker, fucking, that's where everybody, when I say, that was bad wording. When I say the first place to go, I don't mean that's the place you should go. I mean, go as in the first place to disappear.
I've got a list of about 10 people. Nighttown, Foot Locker. I've got a list of about 10 people that I would go to straight away with a chainsaw and go, they're a zombie, straight away, cut their heads off, massacre
call
them.
Up every ex-girlfriend and then, and be like,
that's it, and just fucking
don't look at the internet, but come see me, come meet me now.
Put some fucking makeup on them and just be like, bruv, they were zombies, man, they were coming right for me, like, I couldn't help it.
He's like still alive on the floor being like, no, actually wasn't, like, I wasn't, chopped in half, like, I swear. Definitely. I wasn't, like, I was completely fine.
I think I've seen enough of The Walking Dead that I could murder somebody that I once knew as human who is now turned zombie. I feel I could do it.
Yeah, I could do really that. Without a doubt.
That was all
right. So, all right. Because I want to see. Right. If we're going to cut the bullshit, if I asked you right now, in your lifetime, do you think there'll be a zombie apocalypse? What's your answer? Oof.
Can I? All right. If I'm honest, no.
But if I'm honest, means like you're about to chat some crap, mate.
I feel like there's some crap coming. Part of me does kind of want there to be.
No, but I didn't say want. I said, do you think it will happen?
I don't think it will happen. I just really, really want it to.
You actually want it to happen?
Well,
but what if it happens when you have no bike, no newspaper, no oil? I don't know,
bathtub. Man. I guess bathtub, just because...
No chainsaw.
Because a lot of what I do in my everyday life, I don't have to fight or struggle for my food. I don't have to, you know,
that's
run around.
Great.
I don't have to exert any physical activity. I live too comfortable. Part of me wants to know, would I either be like some fucking warlord's bitch, like on a chain or something like that, or would I be like out there with an eye patch on and like some duster coat? Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
Like, going around the wasteland, just taking what I want. I want to know which one of those would I be.
I would 100%. I'm getting an eye patch the moment.
I see a zombie. Two eyes.
Yeah, two eyes. I'm getting an eye patch. I want to be that guy.
I don't know.
Two machetes just, and an eye patch, bro.
I just want to see if I can.
I still just can't take it seriously, if I'm honest. Like. Yeah, which probably means I'll be the first to die.
You ain't seen The Walking Dead, right?
No, I've seen a lot of The Walking Dead. That's half the reason.
It's kind of died off a little bit.
Yeah.
If anything, if The Walking Dead, if any episode of any season of any moment of The Walking Dead is something to go by.
Spoiler.
No, not at all. It's just to say that, I mean, isn't the premise of every episode, there's a load of zombies and they just get away. That's why I stopped watching it.
It's become less of a problem.
It's the same shit. Yeah. They go to a different place. We should go to this place.
I feel
they
like you
there,
should just hold
up. There's a couple of zombies on the way. They fuck about. They kill them.
You have a sniper, an endless amount of ammo, just sit on a roof and just fucking pick them all off and just stay there for fucking ages. Get a rooftop, bare food, a toilet, fucking bucket, whatever it is, and just stay there on the roof with a fucking stereo. There's only a limited amount of people in the world. If you in London, if you have 3 million bullets,
deep.
It's still a lot, man. It's still a lot. I just reckon. So with that show in particular, it just should have had a fucking end in it.
Yeah,
everything needs to have a beginning, a middle, and a fucking.
You know what?
End.
The same reason why I stopped watching Grey's Anatomy.
Right, never got into it.
I watched Grey's Anatomy. I'm not upset. I'm not embarrassed.
How many seasons deep is Grey's Anatomy?
I think it's like 12 now.
It's way too many.
When they turn into zombies, you're like, this is just stupid now. This is fucking unrealistic.
12 seasons way too many.
Oh, it's too many.
Breaking Bad, Sopranos, 12, 6 seasons,
lock it,
done.
Oh,
finished.
Be disgusting. Done, like... Yeah. They just, it's a money making thing.
Aren't they saying The Simpsons is about to end finally?
Really? I didn't know that.
I think they're saying it's about to end. It's like, what are they going to do?
Done
like,
everything.
More? Yeah. They've got to the point where celebrities, I think, are appearing on it more than once. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like Snoop Dogg's been on like 3 times. Like, what's the point? Like,
I wouldn't even want Snoop Dogg to come around here 3 times.
And that, really that's a beautiful
I would love to have a conversation about zombies with Snoop Dogg.
That's a beautiful moment in your career, though, isn't it? When you can finally say, you know, I've done everything I need to do. Let me step away and do something else. But you also want to do that when it's still at its peak. You never sort of want to be in a position where you're on a decline and then you have to stop.
Like Wenger. Yeah.
Where's that line? Where do you get to that? How do you kind of keep things relevant? How do you keep things fresh?
That's true.
When do you know when to step away?
And how we do, that's about 45 minutes. All right. So that's a beautiful, perfect time to start.
45 minutes.
To end the first half of the Thanks for Trying podcast. We'll be back for the second half. All right, welcome back to part two. Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 16. And we're here after the piss break. Rowan was super dangerous, didn't have a piss.
Didn't need one,
it's fine. It's dangerous. Serious. Yeah. You wouldn't survive in a zombie apocalypse. You'd be there needing a piss the whole time.
I'd be saving my bladder and then just standing on top. I'd like walk up to the top of the skyscraper and give you a little nod and be like, what's this?
And I'd be dead because in the toilet there would have been a zombie hiding in the shower. All right, so we're going to have a little shot, little tradition. Cheers. Thank you, guys.
Big up, boys.
Middle of the afternoon.
Yeah, you gave me a fucking huge one, mate. I don't know what that was about. I did too.
I poured myself like four shots. Oh, man. Nice. It's not even 5 p.m.
This is nice, isn't it?
It's great. In the middle of the day, we have real jobs.
Well, what's nice for me is I've obviously like never really hung out with you guys before. Mm.
Don't ruin
the old friends.
Spoil it.
Well, you know what it made me think of?
You're ruining the image.
This was almost unheard of when I was a kid. There's this. I've got this theory that the phrase "beg friend," okay, has ruined an entire generation of potential, like just people linking up and doing shit.
It was never
all right for me when I was like 16, 17. I could never call up one of you, man, and go. Oh, you're doing something cool. Yeah. I'm doing something cool. Let's do something cool. Unless we're directly in like in the same circle or your boy knows my boy, whatever. I was never allowed to do that. And I feel like we're only just coming out of that way of thinking where it makes so much more sense.
Maybe that's one small positive of the social media age, man, though, because people are just more used to being connected.
But I've had people I know for certain that I've approached for this podcast that I know have been wary about it for that. They're shooting.
Jesus Christ.
Yo, Doug,
popping bottles.
Popping bottles.
Mate, I nearly lost every feature on my face, bro.
Wow.
And we're celebrating together now.
I was trying to do that quietly. Man. Oh my God.
Shit.
Sorry, bro. Oh my God.
Wow, that was dramatic. That
really shaking me up, man, fucking, actually. Yeah, no, that's really shaking me up. No, that really, like...
Oh, wow, that's...
The fucked up thing is I didn't even touch the cork. I literally just... I was just unraveling the wire, mate. That was a bit much.
I bet you say that to the girls. Anyway, I totally agree. There's a mentality that I've spoken about before on this podcast in LA, which is so beautiful, where everyone wants to collaborate. And
it's
be
almost
a part
weird, right?
Yeah, to it's begin crazy. With. They want to, like, you meet someone that does exactly the same thing as you and they still want to work together with you because they know that there's enough money and there's enough work to all work together. And this country is very different with that. Even asking people to come on this podcast, which is a really nice thing, everyone gets to talk about what they're doing or talk shit or whatever. I think some people are still hesitant. It's like, well, you know, I don't know it. I don't know, you know, da 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 da. And it's fucked up.
Do you mean people you've asked?
Yeah, definitely. I've asked a few people that have been fucking long.
People that you've actually not really got a relationship with. You already do this podcast.
But I've reached out and I thought, you know what? I'm going to branch out. I'm going to go, this singer, this so-and-so I really like. We follow each other on Twitter. I'm going to DM him and go, come down. Let's fucking chat shit for 2 hours or whatever. Let's do it. And it's been quite frosty. Definitely.
What is that, man? Because if it's not a postcode thing, it's a city thing, it's a country thing. But I realized before... You've even met somebody.
Yeah.
You have more. We've been conditioned to have more than enough reason to dislike that person. Mm, they're not from the same area as I am.
So what's your usual process for finding the two guests? Do you usually holler both of them individually?
This is very interesting. I've never spoken about this on the podcast. It's great for people listening.
Yeah. Because that's when I was listening back. I was like, I wonder. The mix. Like I listened to the Jest and the Beats one, and I was like, I reckon Corin was like. That would be a funny random mix. Mm-hmm. I was like, I reckon he sorted that himself. Yeah. There was others. I was like, I wonder if he. Do you know what I mean?
A lot of the time, it's people that I'm close friends with, and I think I would love to like pick their brains on you know, on their creative process, because it fascinates me as well. Especially, you say, if there's someone like Dream McLean who I made a record with,
yeah,
and yet I've never spoken to him on a level about, like, you know, deep stuff that I can. Or even when I had Sway on, like, I've known Sway since I was 11 years old, but I've never had a chance.
Big up Sway.
Yeah, to go up to him and go, tell me about Akon. Like, talk to me about it, you know? And it's fascinating for me to get people on and really, really talk about it. And so a lot of the time it's people I know, but then I love the challenge of having people like Catherine Ryan on, who I didn't know personally. And then we can just talk yourself, Dev, you know, like, just fucking.
So what, oh, this Catherine Ryan, somebody brought her?
I met her on Taskmaster when, right, I was Doc's guest on the TV, right,
yeah,
show.
That's a good show.
Like, yeah, great, yeah, show. Right. And I basically met her and I was like, do you want to come on my podcast and big her up? She was like, yes, yeah, I would love to. So
have you,
like, sometimes I just reach out. Yeah.
Right. So you, but usually it's you who finds the two people.
Always. Yeah.
Right.
Apart, okay, from you.
I was just yeah, about to say, I don't want to beat myself up.
It's, yeah, great. I'm happy.
Can we, do
it,
I get,
saves me a headache. I'm
so
happy.
Is this, yeah, what episode is this? Episode
16.
So this is the first time that the guest has sorted the guest.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Cause not, even that was
right, like, now I'm pulling my t-shirt at my shoulder and flicking.
Yeah, this is great, man.
Cause even that was like a weird, like, we've never
met.
Ever. Shit, I didn't know that.
No, we never met. Literally. Right. Yeah. Just talked on Twitter.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's dope.
But that's what I mean. Like, I've sort of come from, well, we've come from a world where that was never really a thing, was it?
Yeah.
Where you would never just collaborate with somebody outside of your circle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, even I've been thinking for ages, I want to do a podcast. I really just want an extension of what I already do.
Yeah.
But then you must have gone through this as well. You overthink it. You wonder, who's going to listen to it? Oh, yeah. Am I going to be able to sort out a guest every single week? I'm sort of like in those stages now. And I even have a good friend of mine, Marcus Bronzy, who does a podcast. And
that's right. With Funk Butcher.
As soon as he put his one out, then I started thinking, the way I've been conditioned to think is, oh, I was going to do that. Yeah, that was, exactly. But that, who gives a fuck? Like, that's his thing. Let me do my thing as well. And then I noticed the trend of a lot of American podcasts that I listen to. They get guests on who do that, and then they plug their shit, and you have this sort of community that's been built up, and they don't see any problem with that cross promotion. But for some reason, it's just been just built into my mind that's not the way that things go over here, but it should be. This is exactly how it should be.
No, because we're all stronger. All podcasts should collaborate.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Like, 100%. The same way that, like, you'll get like Charlemagne will go on Drink Champs, and then Nori,
100%.
Nori will go on Breakfast. Yeah, yeah. I've hit up
a person who's got a very famous podcast, and he had no interest in coming on this one.
Right.
And that's a wonderful segue into something I did want to talk to you about before I go back onto my hosting duties, which, don't worry, I'll come for you in a bit, is basically about Don't Flop, which is, you know, it's a, you organize so many fucking people with that all of the time. And it's such a wonderful fucking thing to be hugely proud of as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, 100%.
And, but for people that don't know, so we think people have no idea what Don't Flop is, just give them the fucking elevator sale right now.
Wow, the elevator sale.
Yeah.
All right, so I've wasted 5 seconds being surprised. It's just picture either the dirtiest pub you can picture with 50 people in, or the biggest venue you can picture with 1,000 people in. But what's happening in the middle is always the same, just two MCs going at it, not really trying to talk about things that are really going to hurt the other person, but just seeing who's a better lyricist, who's funnier, who can be more intelligent. That's how I've always seen it. Like, I think there was a phase when battle rap was very much like, who can find out the most about people's past girlfriend, people, you know, like messaging people's ex-girlfriends to find issues and pathetic stuff. Right now, I'd say that Don't Flop is all about, it could be 10 people or it could be 100,000, but it's just really about just standing somewhere, enjoying it, getting drunk, you know, listening to some music, seeing two people battle, and just and it's just, obviously battle rap is a pillar of hip hop, you know what I mean? However corny that sounds like a wanky purist thing to say, but it is like a pillar
of hip hop.
That's
where it came from.
Yeah, it came from battle rap. You know, I came up through battle rap. The whole reason I do Don't Flop is because I came up from the age of 16 battle rapping on the street. It wasn't like, you know, a ghetto street, it was a kebab shop in Norwich. You know what I mean? But like I could take you to the kebab shop right now and I'm still good. Because they'll be like, oh, that's her. Like, but yeah, so it's like that's I've always been involved in it. I've always thought it's a great concept that you don't need any equipment, any backing beats, no nothing. You just turn up wherever you want. You turn the camera on. And, you know, back in the day, there was no cameras. You know what I mean?
Oh, I get so much anxiety watching those videos, man. It's such a...
How did you get into it? Because we ain't even talked about this. Like, I don't even know how you know about it.
It was just from a YouTube recommended. YouTube does this quite clever thing with algorithms, and it curates your feed based on what you've already watched. Yeah. So who knows? I'm a huge... like WorldStar might as well be my homepage. I love it for all its ignorance. I love it for all its negativity and that. Like, I'm just, but that's only because I care about the culture and whatever. But I remember, like, it's interesting also that you brought up the when battles were getting too personal, because I remember there was probably about a 6 month period where I'd be on, you know, like watching a Don't Flop battle, and I noticed a very distinct turn from just being, like, prepared in terms of having lines. Either, like, what I loved was either bringing up somebody else's song or something like that, or perhaps a failed record deal. Those are all really clever. When it turned to stuff about someone's baby mother, someone's dead uncle, you start thinking, well, where's the line?
It's corny, but I've never been a supporter of it, ever. Yeah.
And also the raping shit.
Like, yeah, I was like, you know what I mean? Nah. I didn't even want to take it there, but
you're allowed
it's corny.
You can't give an artist, a rapper, whatever you want to call them, you can't give them sort of parameters.
I'll tell you what, though, this is definitely something about growing older and growing up, right? This is how my perspective on battle rap has changed. I remember not too many years ago, when I was still relatively new, I remember whenever there was fights in battles, I'd always be like, oh my God, that's pathetic. Like, if you're in a battle, anything goes. You know all that bollocks you always hear. I tell you what, the more battles I've seen, the more things that I've done, places I've been involved with battle rap, whatever, as time goes on, you're like, do you know what, actually? I look back at all these times there's been fights and I think, I actually don't have as much a problem with that as I thought, because I look at it and it's because it's like the fights don't kick off because someone says, oh, I'm lyrically better than you. They kick off because someone says something. It's basically like the reason there's beef in battle rap is when people are using this like almost invisible force field that are like, oh, because I'm making stuff rhyme, I can say whatever the fuck I want. Do you know what I mean? And that to me, there was this point I was at where I was like, I was one of them people. I was feeling like, yeah, it's a battle. If you're in a battle, you know, because obviously everyone's seen that, you know, clip. Even if you're not into battling, everyone's seen that clip of, you know, Mathoffer and Dose when he's like, oh, get out of my face, son, get out of my face. Yeah, with his see, exactly. Yeah, yeah, people who aren't even into battle rap have seen that clip, right? But this is what I'm saying. When I first saw that, I was like, you know, oh, this guy, he punched him, is a prick. But you look at it now and you're like, he clearly said to him, you know, get your cap's in my face, you're touching my head with your cap, get out of my face. He didn't do it, so he punched him. You know what I mean? So I think it's just like, it's very easy to take this line of like, oh, you're a mindless thug if you fight through battle rap. I'm more now, I'm like, there's fights and then that have, you know, nearly kicked off at events, and I'm kind of like, I can't really say anything about that, because it's real.
Even
like,
when so I
you're talking
to,
about rape and this, stop, man. Like, come on, you deserve anything that happens if you're just going to say, because I'm rapping, I can say this. Like, nah, I don't agree with that at all. No way.
There was nearly a fight when I came to one at Ministry of Sound, the last
really?
One.
Really? Which one? Do you remember what they looked like?
I can't remember.
Given the
situation. Oh, you mean Shotty and Charlie Clips?
Yeah.
When Charlie Clips brought people on stage.
Yeah, that's right.
And he did, sorry, can we take a moment of silence for one of possibly the worst angles ever taken in a battle, when Charlie Clips said, I'm gonna lyrically jump you. That's what he said. That's what that was. He said, I'm lyrically jumping you, as in I'm gonna get other rappers on stage, but instead of kicking the shit out of you, we're gonna spit bars at you.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So that's become like a running joke and Don't Flop. Oh, like, a lot since that battle, numerous battles, people will be like, you're about to get lyrically jumped. It's one of the worst lines of all time, man. Like,
you can also, from certainly my perspective, tell that there's some people trying to recreate that 8 Mile moment where you just took it there. Yeah. You took it there, and then that you can almost tell when they were rehearsing it in their mind, it was like, yeah, this is gonna, the crowd's gonna go sick at this bit. But there was a brilliant post interview with Genesis Elijah.
Oh, and he's
talking about, that's why I basically don't battle rap.
Oh, and he's like, he says some shit about like,
if you said something about my girl.
Do you know what he says? He says, if that was me, he wouldn't be leaving the venue. he says, I'll be making some calls. You
that's
ain't going
what I mean.
Home.
So is it wow. just battle rap? Is what? Because a lot of the like dancehall sound systems, for example, are notorious for this, they hold no punches. I remember seeing a clash once where one of the guys wasn't able to attend one of the sound systems because he had colon cancer, and the other sound system said, I know the reason so and so ain't here is because he's got cancer in his batty, because he's like been fucked by too many men. You're like, you can't take it there. But in that setting, absolutely fine. There's nobody who said, oh, that was out of line, or oh, maybe you shouldn't. It just keeps on.
That's terrible.
But it's interesting to see that you're at least mindful of implicating some sort of, yeah, you know, there is a line.
It's also like another running joke in DoFlop is like certain moments that people, because obviously my face is on every video, so people who come in and have never met anybody from the scene, they almost magnetize, you know, towards me, you know, because they want to talk to me and see what I think about their battles. Yeah. So like, there's a lot of tryout battles. It's like being a running joke where a lot of tryouts will come in and they'll spit most of their bars to me. And I'm just standing there with a face like a smacked ass. Like, because yo, obviously if you spit all your bars to me and they're fire, oh my God, it'd be amazing. I'd be, yeah. My expressions on my face are endless, but it's like, but it's a lot of the time a tryout will come in and they'll be very nervous. I understand that, you know, they've been watching Don't Flop for like 4 years. They've finally fucking emailed us. Oh God, it's my big moment. But they stand there and they'll start their round with like, the first ever bar to ever get on the channel is like, you know, so called me up, and straight away I'm like, no, you didn't. That didn't happen. Because, you know, that's a big American thing. That's a lot of American battles, and, you know, in Smack, the league Smack, they always say, so Smack called me up. And like, people try to do that and Don't Flop, and I'm like, it just doesn't work. Because, yo, if anyone that knows me, like, I don't answer the phone, bro. I definitely didn't fucking call you.
Yeah.
If you're like, maybe I might have emailed you and said, so it's 160 second round. Bro, I didn't call you and say, hi, mate. So, mate. So like, when any tryout says anything like that, the whole room looks at me and my face is so clearly unimpressed. Wow. And I'm like, okay, keep going. And sometimes, to be honest, they win it back. Often they're absolutely terrible.
Because your face, though, is, you are the face of your brand.
And it's got beta since I've got a beard and long hair. So I've noticed it heavily.
Distinctive,
I,
right?
Yeah, mate, I look so much more distinctive now than I used to. People approach me way more.
Well, this is what I was going to ask. It's a lot of your life, like teenage boys just wanting to come up to you and spit some, like, and if it's battle bars as well, that must be a little bit weird.
The one that always stays with me is like, we did a Don't Flop in Leicester, and Leicester's, it's really random, we've got a big fan base up there and they're always so fucking cool. We did a Don't Flop up there, and I was sitting in the smoking area trying to catch my breath, whatever. Dude comes up, teenage boy, just mad respectful, whatever. We're talking, oh, I'm having a great night, blah, blah, blah. Now, I don't know if you've ever, you know, as you know, you're a name as well, and you both, you know, names in the hip-hop scene, in the radio scene,
thanks,
whatever.
I appreciate that.
Like, I mean, you may have witnessed this. Obviously, I'm sure you've had people that want to rap to you. Now, I don't know if you've ever had this, right?
Spitting in your fucking ear.
Right, but this is this thing, right? This time in Leicester has started off a huge snowball. It's happened more and more times. This thing, I can't really describe it, of people who are like, they're like the next 2.0 level of rapping in your ear, where they realize this guy must get this all the time. So what I'm gonna do is make it look like we're having a conversation. Now, this has happened to me numerous times
since. That's so meta. Yeah,
where you sit down and so it'll be like this. It'll be like this. They'll be like, say I come up to you and I'm like, yo, you last skipped to you. Oh yeah, oh, this is, you're playing in a minute, aren't you? Yeah, big up, man. You're a good sick DJ, bro. And you'll be like, oh, thanks, man, big up. And I'll be like, yeah, because notice how my voice is not changing. Yeah. Like, yeah. So basically, like, check it, because obviously, like, because I grew up in Hackney on the back streets, and it's like, you see what I'm saying, right? This is what I'm saying, it's like some espionage shit, and this is what happens to me now. No one sees me, and because of my reputation as being so unimpressed, no one directly says, can I spit you some bars? But they'll say I'm drinking this Prosecco, they'll be like, oh, what kind of Prosecco is that? Let me hear that. And I'll be like, oh, you're doing it. And then once they've trapped you in the conversation, you're like, oh my God. And do you know the other thing, that every time that person is with one of their mate just looks like a fucking ghost, because they look at you and they think they're basically telepathically saying to you, I'm so sorry for my friend. Mate, we had a time, I was leaving an event, we were all going to Camden. We left an event, we went to Camden, and the train pulled up at Camden, right? And this guy that was doing the talking, rapping thing, whatever, he was still trying to, we'll call it tapping. He was tapping him at it, bro. I swear to God, his boy looked at him, and obviously they must have lived past Camden, you know, the fucking chalk farm, whatever. We got to Camden, and his boy was looking at him and was like, trying to be like, oh, why are you trying to get off the tube? And he was like, oh, I'm just gonna stay with these lot, you know? And his boy was looking at him as if to be like, no,
you don't know these people.
You read the situation.
His boy was looking at him and he was looking at me as if to be like, I'm sorry, I'm going to try. And his friend, he was not having a fucking word of it, mate. His friend was like, no, it's cool. I'll stay. I'm a roll with these lot. And just followed us through Camden doing that exact thing. I'm telling you, man, honestly. But yo, shout out to anyone listening that's actually spat bars to me and they've been crazy,
well, you don't
man. There's certain people that stop
down,
me.
Yeah,
bro, every now and then someone spits bars and I'm like, fucking hell, you're sick. Take my email. Let's stay in touch.
Yeah.
But I'm going to be honest, a lot of the time it's the tapping in the ear and it's very,
you don't want to piss on somebody's dreams, do you? Exactly. You don't want to shut somebody down, and but you also want people to be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I have like a younger nephew, and sometimes when I hear him and his pals talk, they have such unrealistic expectations from life. I talked to them the other day about what they want to do. One of them tried to tell me, first I'm going to play in the Premiership, then I'm going to play in the NBA.
I wanted to play in the NBA.
But then you get to the point where you realize how much work you have to put in just to be in with a shot.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you're 15 years old, you don't do nothing. There's a 12-year-old out there right now who's fucking getting up at 4 in the morning and practicing whatever, but they're very unrealistic expectation. But at the same time, you don't want to shoot them down to the point where they don't have any self-esteem.
Exactly.
I had a moment last year, and I was in Ibiza. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning. I was in space. I was probably not in the right frame of mind to have a full-on conversation with someone. And this kid come up to me and said, it's probably like 2021. And he said, Dev, I met you at this radio academy thing a few years ago. I was like, how's it going, man? He went, yeah, look, I got an internship at like BBC Midlands. I was like, that is fucking awesome. Well done. Yeah. And then he said to me, so how'd you get into radio, man? And I was just thinking, dude, it's like not right. 4 in the morning. Great night, mate. No, I would love to talk to you about this, but it's just like, even if I could, what you want me to? So yell at you over the music. So like, so when I was 13, right, I got on pirate radio.
That's cringing me out too much.
Why would
there's
you?
A time and a place.
You know what? That's a perfect entrance into the world of dev.
I was just about to say, yo, let's chat to this chat to this man for a little.
My main thing that I wanted to pick your brains on. I spoke to you briefly about it when we had a chat before we started recording. But how the fuck do you do those early mornings, man? That would kill me.
I don't know, man. Like. You know, this
for people that don't know, you currently, because you've hosted a lot of different shows on BBC Radio 1.
So at the moment, I do the weekend breakfast show, 6 or 10 Saturday and Sunday.
6 a.m., it's not p.m.
Yeah, no, I used to do
6 a.m.
I used to do 4 till 6:30 a.m., Monday to Friday. And I did that at the same time as like a music degree and trying to run a studio. And the analogy I used, particularly when I was doing that, obviously now it's not it's not as bad, but the analogy I used when I was doing it early mornings is, you know, in the Roadrunner cartoons, Wile E. Coyote would only fall off a cliff, right? Once he'd run over the edge, he would only fall off once he looked down and realized that there was nothing underneath. Yeah. But if you just keep running and you don't look and you don't ever look down, then you'll be all right. That just becomes your reality. I never worked out a system or anything. I never had a routine or nothing like that. But doing that many radio shows when you haven't had any sleep, you just have to show up and just talk shit.
Do you rave the night before?
Sometimes I've gone out the night before.
You just do straight through?
There's a few times where I've either forgotten where I'm like covering someone's show. There's like a few years ago where I'd like gone on a proper night out and forgotten that I was doing someone's show. And I showed up for work so hungover, I was convinced they're just going to look at me and go,
next one.
But they let me go on and no one said anything.
So do you just do the weekend or do you do other things?
At the moment, I just do weekends. I cover the drive time show during the week quite a lot. I cover like some other people's shows. But I was just saying before we'd started that I have this is like my routine. These are like how my months are usually usually made up. I'll have 2 days, maybe 3 days, where I do nothing. I mean nothing. I don't mean, I have a little hobby. No, I do nothing. I'll sit in my house, I'll play my Xbox or something. I'll do nothing. But then I have 16, 17 days on the trot where it might be a bunch of gigs or covering somebody's show, something that involves travel, maybe three, 4 days for a shoot. So then I have those days that I really appreciate those days where I don't do anything.
Yeah.
But I am also craving a little bit of, I would really like some sort of routine. I think I would really like it.
Because there's no actual routine apart from the weekends.
No routine. And 2 days a week is not really enough to get yourself into any kind of regular sleeping pattern.
But it's the same with all of us. Like there's the lack of routine is I mean, it's sometimes it fucks you up mentally because it's the purpose thing. Like next week, I've 5 days. I looked at my calendar. Usually my calendar is all over the shop of meetings or record sessions, whatever, or podcasts. Next week, I looked at my diary and I'm like, fuck, I've got 5 days with nothing in my diary.
Yo, let's do next week.
Yeah, let's record a fucking
EP, bro.
I'm here. Because before my album drops in September, by the way, first time I've announced it, let's do it. September 29th is coming out.
Exclusive.
Before that comes, like, I'm just in that weird waiting game beforehand where I'm just doing all the admin and getting my t-shirts and lighters and vinyl. And like, so I've just got like 5 days of just... You know,
we can get Dev to do the intros like DJ Khaled.
That's it.
Here's one more.
Yeah. They go to England.
Oh, mate.
But you know what? I didn't mean to make it sound like I was like bitching or moaning or anything.
No,
the reality is, I don't think I'd rather my life was any different.
I was about to say, how long has your life been like this?
Well, I haven't had to have a proper like, day job 9 to 5 since I was like 16 or 17.
That's fucking amazing.
There's been a lot. I've been able to say, all right, this is my job for a really, really long time.
You must
be
so proud of that. Like, that's such a fucking achievement.
Yeah, but all right. So I think about it two ways. One is, yeah, I have worked very hard to get to that point. In fact, I have friends who wind me up sometimes. Like, oh, you only work like 3 days a week. It's like, yeah, ain't that the fucking point? Ain't the point to work hard so that you get to a stage in your life where you don't have to work every single day?
Yeah.
The other thing is, though, having been at that level for a while, I do feel like maybe it's robbed me a little bit of some ambition. You know, I don't have that absolute hunger like, fuck, I need to write something or I need to come up with some project. And I feel like that's been a little bit damaging.
It's an overlying purpose or switch it, because that's what I feel all of the time. I'm like, what is my purpose? What's my role?
Yeah,
and if I don't have that purpose, even if it's within the setting of a day, then I feel like unfulfilled. You know what I mean?
No doubt.
So I totally hear that.
And I want to do stuff. I do want to write, and there's a lot of other things that I want to do, but it's quite difficult some days when I wake up and I think, I don't actually have to do shit. Exactly. Like, I don't want to. I don't actually have to do shit. I had a lot of days where I got up super early. I didn't have a social life. I didn't do shit. Like, I went to work and then I went to uni. That was it.
Yeah.
And now I'm quite enjoying just taking a little bit of time off, you know. Yeah. Someone wants to like record a 2-hour podcast in the middle of the day. Yes. I quite like that. I can go, yeah, all right, cool.
Have you ever had that? You know, where people assume, because you're on the radio, you know, you've done TV, whatever you've done.
Yeah.
Like, people think they talk to you as if like you're the biggest thing that ever existed. Like, and they start cracking jokes about kind of like, oh, what, you're too big for little old me.
Yeah,
and
that's,
you're
like,
oh god,
you know,
I hate
them,
that
yeah,
shit.
You know exactly what I mean. And you're being like, bro, like, it's not even like that at all. Like, people will see it with me. Like, if one of my battles goes super viral, you know, which has only happened, what, 6 times? Not that many. Like, there's a few times in that period whilst the view count is accumulating, any person I see will be like, oh, you know, like, you're not going to be able to talk to me soon.
I'm like,
shut the fuck up.
It's so dumb. Yeah.
This video is made like £500, bro. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
like,
you're also like, in a weird position where people for the most part have already made their mind up about you before they met you.
Exactly.
So they'll project a lot of what they already. I try and do that. I try not to do that with people I might have seen on telly or whatever. I try and just, all right, okay, you know, they're on neutral when I meet them. But maybe where it's a little bit difficult, different for me, when I was in school and I was growing up, I told all my friends, you watch, I'm gonna be all right. Like, you know, like, I never took school seriously. I didn't like work hard, study or whatnot. I told all my teachers, watch, when I leave school, I'm gonna do telly or radio or something. And they're like, oh, you can't go through life thinking it's all just a joke. So I'm kind of like in that position where, oh, you know, all that shit I said I was gonna do in school, I actually did it, but not in a smug way, just in a, I always believed in myself. And is how I was brought up, where my mum didn't really teach me much responsibility. I'm quite a responsible adult. I don't really look after myself very well. But on the flip side of that, I've always been, oh, well, I can do anything. If I want, if there's something that I'm interested in or a passion I have, I'm just going to pursue it and not feel like, oh, I can't do that, I'm not going to be good enough or whatnot. But it's interesting that I get maybe two, especially people I grew up with, two different ways that people treat me. Either people just know I haven't changed at all, I'm the exact same person I was before I did radio or telly or whatnot. Or people who kind of anticipate that I'm somehow going to lord it over them. Like, I had this guy that I was in school with. We weren't super tight, but I'd seen him near my mum's one time when I went to go see her. And I just said to him, oh, how's it going? You're all right. And straight away, he started rattling off all this shit he was doing. Oh, well, you know, I just got married and, you know, I just got made partner in this company that I'm working for. And yeah, of course, I just booked a holiday to go. And I was like, I just meant how you are in, you know, your general well-being. So you don't have to.
You felt like he was trying to be like, well, you've done shit, but so have I.
Yeah, like almost,
I'm on your level sort of thing.
So or, you know, trying to validate himself for me, which I always find that a little bit weird. That puts me on the back foot in a conversation straight away. If somebody treats me like I'm not just a regular
level.
I don't feel like that in my, no one treats me like that from my family or none of my friends. I don't hang out with anybody who treats me like that, so it always puts me on the back foot a little bit. But I don't know, the other thing that I get a bit anxious about is you're never allowed to, if somebody approaches you in the wrong way, you always have to be cool about it, because I do worry a little bit, if I'm a cunt to that person, they're just going to go and say, oh, I met so-and-so and he was like a prick. But there's, by being recognisable, there's certain boundaries that people bypass all of a sudden. Like, think about this. They know
you're not going to be the same as how they're being.
Yeah, yeah, it's so weird. I have this thing with other people touching my hair or coming up to me and putting an arm around me. Like, think about this. If we'd never met before and I walked up to you and put my arm around you and took a selfie with you, you'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? It's weird. But all of a sudden, because you're recognizable, that's okay. You have to be all right with that. It doesn't matter how bad your day might be going, what mood you might be in, you got to spin the fucking bow tie as soon as anyone runs up to you. That's a little bit jarring. I find that harder to do nowadays, is to just be cool all the time.
Yeah. What I've noticed for me, like which may be different for you, because obviously I'm doing like regular, like, you know, live events where I'm the main person involved in it. I'm the main promoter, the main face. So like what's different is like there's such a disparity like between how people behave to me at Don Flop events compared to how they behave to me just on road.
Right,
so like what you're saying about the arm round, a touching, whatever. At a Don Flop event, it's nothing but respect. Because it's almost like you're in my backyard. Yeah. It doesn't matter what club it is, everyone knows like us the one that's put this on, you know what I mean? It's his thing. I'm hosting it. I'm on the mic saying, you know, you've been to the events, you know what I mean? It's like I'm saying, okay, 5 minutes time, whatever, you know. Okay, so at events, for example, exactly what you mean about the hugging and the touching, sometimes I'll say to people, if someone is getting a little bit too weird, I'm like, or it's been super, you're keen. And obviously, I love talking to the fans. My priority, though, is making sure the battles happen and they look good.
Yeah, of course.
So sometimes people will catch me, can I grab a photo or whatever? And I'll always be like, at a Don't Flop event, yo, do you know what? We definitely can, but let me just sort this shit out first and then let's take the picture. And I'm telling you, at one of my events, 10 out of 10 times, of course, bro, go do your thing. Like, they're so understanding. Because the fans, let's say 200 people come to an event. Those 200 people, they're the super fans that pay 30, 40 pounds. You know what I mean? So, of course, they're like, oh, bro, sorry, man, go do your thing. However, if we're talking the tube, a restaurant, on road, anywhere, a shop, anything. I got recognised in Sainsbury's whilst I was buying a quiche or some shit. But I'm saying,
not in your allotted quiche time, man.
Not very on brand.
No,
quiche. But that's when it gets different, because that's when people start going. That's when if I say, do you know what? Let me just buy this quiche, or whatever I'm doing, and then because I'm always happy to do it, but it's always like people catch you. You know what it is.
Yeah.
They catch you in a time when you're doing something. Then they're not so understanding.
Yeah.
Because then it's kind of, because the people you seem to meet outside of events are maybe the more casual fans who, to be quite blunt, they don't really give a fuck about you. They don't care. Yeah. Like you said, you're like a caricature.
Those are the majority of people that I meet.
That's what I'm saying.
Someone who wants, they don't want to take a picture because they want to take a picture. They want to take a picture because they want to put it on their Snap or put it on their.
Whereas say if you threw your event, if you were like, you know, Dev Presents, whatever, anyone that came to that event, if they asked you for a photo and you said, give me 5 minutes, nothing, no problem at all. But it's because, you know, people we would meet in these other strange social situations.
And I also feel like that I'm at the stage where I've always been like this. If I'm a real appreciator of someone's work, which you could call a fan, I don't really even want a picture. No. I kind of just want to go up to them and go, bruv, like, or Mrs. whoever it is. And just
that was
be like,
nice save. Yeah, that was
very nice save. Like, madame. Like, it's just like, I really fucking respect and rate your work. Like, that's all I got to say. Like, if you want to chat, if you want to have a drink, we have a chat call. If not, I've, you know, I just want to say big up, like, all good, I'm out here.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really want to fucking do that. So but you know what, like, going back to Dev, it's a fucking amazing podcast so far, but I want to rein it in back to my questions for you. I read a little bit, obviously I did a little bit of research as well.
A lot of stuff on my Wikipedia is not true, by the way.
The one thing I know is true is that you've done a lot of features on your radio show, right?
Different radio shows,
which fascinates me, because when I listen to radio, I think, how the fuck do people come up with these things? They are fucking sick, actually, yeah? So one of my things I wanted to ask is, how tough is it to think of these features?
Well, all right, so first thing is, it has to be funny to me.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff I do, the last thing I want to be is taken seriously when I do my radio shows. Yeah. If it's early in the morning, people are in a silly mood, or they're tired, or they're getting up and they fucking hate their job, or just whatever. No one wants to be awake at 5 a.m. on a Saturday or whenever it is, right? So that we all at least have that in common.
Yeah.
So first thing is, it has to be something that's funny to me. And what's funny to me is doing something in a serious way that's obviously not a serious thing. So I have a feature called, we do fucking heads or tails on the show, right? And every week, guaranteed, someone will text and going, I can't fucking believe my license fee is paying for you to play fucking heads or tails. Can you really not think of anything else? And to me,
that's the funniest thing ever
is that someone is so annoyed that I'm playing this really dumb game.
I do love that anything BBC related someone doesn't agree with, the go-to comment is I don't pay my license fee for this. He's like, you don't fucking know what you pay your license fee.
Thanks for your 12 pence.
That's so funny. Oh my god.
But that is one thing that I do love about being on Radio 1 is your connecting and talking with so many different people, and people who, you know, never hang out with people like us, or like don't know anything about us, but they're also the level of expectation, because there's so much heritage of Radio 1. Like, so I was on One Extra for a long time, was on One Extra right from the beginning for like the first 7 years, and that's I went on to Radio 1 afterwards. And the distinct difference between those two audiences, One Extra is very much in awe of the DJ, you know, with they love the music, they love the culture that surrounds it, they want you know, show me what's like the next big tune. Radio 1, because they've got this heritage, they're like, I pay my fucking license fee. I used to listen to this show before you and that show before that person. You better fucking make me laugh. And that almost, someone sat there with their arms crossed going, well, go on then, do something. That I quite like that. I like that I'm playing to that person in the room, that person who doesn't like me, doesn't know about where we come from, or, you know, or any of that shit. I like playing for that person because it's difficult. You know, what do they say when if you're like trying to work a difficult crowd or whatever? I like playing to that. I like playing to a tough crowd.
Sorry, when you say heads or tails, do you literally mean
flip a coin? Whatever you're thinking in your mind right now.
I'm going to tune in next week and I'm going to text.
Whatever you're thinking right now.
That's
great.
Have you seen it's quite a famous clip now of these two school kids battle rapping. It's sort of very, very base level battle rap, but it's just some northern kids in a playground or something, and it's the most basic line, something like, last night me and your mum wrote a porno, as soon as the punchline comes out, it's like, oh
and they go crazy.
I was watching, I was like, that's don't flop. That's this whole culture of whole generation of kids. Like,
sounds like a backhanded compliment.
That's
not what I'm going for, man.
Like,
kids in playground.
But it must be a weird realization, right? That this idea that you've had, or this thing that you don't put it out thinking, right, this clip's gonna go viral. This is gonna get shared this amount of times.
I tell you what, this is like again, you know, battle rap super scene fact or whatever. But battle rap is bigger than the Philippines. I'm dropping knowledge out. I've had this fact confirmed by numerous people who've been to the Philippines, right? The league up there is called Flip Top, right? Mm. And when I mean big, I mean, you know, you're talking 2,000-3,000 people at events big, right? Shit. And check this. It's been verified by numerous people that it's so big out there, they don't call battle rapping, the kids on in the favelas, whatever you call them in the Philippines, the kids in basically the ghettos, they call it flip topping.
Wow.
Yeah. What? That's how big it is. The channel is on like 1 billion+ views or whatever. Shit. And they literally, the kids, when one of my colleagues recently went there and he said that they genuinely like, yo, they're like, oh, you rap, you want a flip top or whatever? Like, crazy is that?
That sounds like a great drug.
And
like I said,
when I first got told it, I was like, that sounds like a little story. Anyone who's gone to the Philippines has confirmed it. Like, that's how
I'm supposed to be going there at the end of the year.
Bro, I'm telling you, man, go to the ends.
Yeah. You want to flip top?
I'm telling you, and they'll all be like, oh my God. Like,
yeah. It's such a compelling medium. Crazy. That. To just explain it, I think it's more intimidating than stand-up comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Even though you get the whole freestyle versus pre-written thing, you still have to stand up in a room full of people who might not necessarily be, at least half of them aren't rooting for you. They'll be rooting for the other person. You got to somehow recite it, make it coherent, many times without a fucking microphone. Somehow win over that audience, make sure that your lines are dropping. If someone, say for example, if there's too much of a reaction over your last punchline, you then have to wait for it so you can set up the next one.
You sound like you understand this shit.
You're almost...
my name is Rowan, man. Nice to meet you, bro. Like,
I watch it
email
in two
me
ways,
on entry
right?
at donflop.com and let's make something happen, bro. Like, you sound like you get this shit.
I watch it in two ways. One, just amazed that anybody is able to just recite something, whether you've written it or you're thinking about it there, or it's a mixture of the two. But part of me is almost going, oh, it's going to fuck up any minute now.
Yeah.
Oh, almost, you know how you would watch someone skydiving or on a bobsleigh or something. You're watching it, in awe, but almost like, fuck, is it going to mess up? And when it does, you feel on someone's behalf.
So have you ever watched Battle Rap Live?
No,
you got to come to Don't Flop with them.
If you know everything you're saying is times 20 in person.
Yeah,
when you see,
really
if you
feel
see
it
someone
when,
fuck up,
it,
like the lyrical jumping, I was worried for his safety, mate. I'm telling you, when Shotty Horror got lyrically jumped, I was like, he might not make it out of here alive. Like,
oh man, like yeah.
It was one of the cringiest moments of my life.
I can't deal with cringe sometimes. Like, I can watch Curb, I love it, it's fine. But sometimes when it's too cringe, I have to just like. I don't know what to do. It's like I absorb the emotion of cringe and I have to hide or I look on my phone. Like, I went to a wedding recently, I won't say who, where the speech, the best man speech was fine. It was hilarious. The groom's speech was the most cringe thing that I've ever seen.
Why? How?
In my life. Oh,
give
man.
It all away. Give it. Make it clear.
Was it because they tried to freestyle it?
Yeah, they tried to battle.
He choked on his speech. Like, yo.
So
I got a call from her.
Reload that.
So what, you saying it was cringy because it was somebody trying to be funny? He wasn't
it
funny.
Was
weddings are fucking
bad.
Cringy
weddings
though anyway,
are
isn't it?
Really awful.
Come and watch us.
Weddings. Yeah.
Say that
parade.
We're gonna, yeah.
Yo, look, sorry, look. One thing I wanted to talk about, because I'm guessing we've very nearly reached our time.
Oh shit, which is
wonderful. But I wanted to ask what has gone wrong, Dev, with you with live, with interviews. You've done so many interviews and I'm quite intrigued. Like,
Luke said, with life.
With life. What's gone wrong with your life?
I'm thinking I'm trying to make a good impression, bro. What the fuck?
No, but like,
where do I start?
What's gone wrong with your life? Why have you ended up in my living room?
That's it, you're here.
Nothing better to do.
So now I'm fascinated. I've got so many questions about because of all these fucking people that you've interviewed. And I know the people at home listening will have so many questions about all these so-called your celebrities, famous people, whatever that you, the amazingly talented people that you've interviewed. But what's gone wrong? Tell me about something fucked up that's happened.
Well, a lot of it is live. It's my favorite way to do things. I like doing stuff live. I like when stuff messes up live that you can go, oh, it's all fucked up or whatever. Like swearing accidentally has been, that's happened a couple of times. I remember there was a rumor that Westwood was going to be on Strictly Come Dancing a few years ago.
Wow.
And I tried to say, I'd done this whole bit about, you'd never catch Westwood on there. And the punchline was something like, you'd never catch Westwood in a low cut top. Right.
Right.
And what I actually said was, you'd never catch Westwood in a low cut top.
Oh, no.
His Kelly Clarkson or whatever it was, and my producer was freaking out. Oh, no. Bear in mind, this probably went out about.
It's like a waxing procedure. Do you want the Hollywood? The Do you want the Hollywood? The Brazilian or the low?
That's what I want.
I thought I got away. I thought I got away with it.
I would have one of those.
My producer was freaking out.
You said cunt on Radio 1.
Yeah, at like 6 a.m. man. Ooh. I think the reason I got away with it is because I still like
that.
That's it. 6 a.m.
Good morning, cunt.
No cunt.
But like, I think beautiful. The reason I got away with it is because it's not like I was saying, oh, that guy, yeah, he's a cunt. Yeah, yeah. It's obviously a slip of the tongue. But yeah, it was is pretty mortifying. I remember once when, so this should have been one of the most, it should have been a great moment. It was ruined a little bit, but I was interviewing Jet from Gladiators a couple of years back.
Oh my God, I wouldn't be able to contain myself.
Serious. I tried it. I did try it.
I mean, of course you have to.
She shot me down, but I did try it, obviously. I'd tell everybody as well. Like, if I smashed Jet from Gladiators, I'd just tell everybody. I'm talking about it. I didn't even do nothing with that.
I'll jump off a bridge. I'd be like, I'm done.
Seriously.
See, this is another example. Like, I can vaguely picture what she looks like, but not really.
She's the best one.
Brunette, right? Brunette.
Yeah.
See, okay, we're the same age. So that's what, you know.
So this is how bad I had it for Jet, right? I sent off like a bunch of tokens from Frosties plus £4 post and packaging, and I had a life size cutout of Jet from Gladiators in my bedroom.
Where is that now? Have you still got it?
It's been destroyed.
Destroyed with what?
Yeah, exactly.
He had to throw it out.
Damage.
It lost its rigidity. After a while.
Sodden.
His parents were like,
this is a ruin.
Lump of paper mache.
You went camping one weekend and came back in it and just fucking disappeared, mate.
So I was interviewing Jet from Gladiators, and at the same time, Joe Wiley, who is actually really shy in real life. Like, I'd spoken to her a couple of times, but she's super shy in real life. I'd never spoken to her. Somebody had obviously set her up for this prank that they were going to pull on me. Mm. So she comes running into the studio. We're live, you know, we're on the radio. Saturday morning, maybe like 12 o'clock or something. Mm. And she comes running in with these free snowballs, and she just goes, snowball fight!
No.
And I'd only been on the radio for about 6 months, on Radio 1, sorry. And she throws this massive snowball, and it like whacks me in the chest and then hits this £2 million desk, you know, and I see it start melting into the desk immediately, and I'm trying to scoop shit out whilst also trying to explain to people who have just tuned in, I'm here with Jet from Gladiators, and Joe Wiley's just come running into the studio and is throwing fucking snowballs everywhere, and yeah, it was all a little bit of a mess to try and to try and pull together, but yeah, at least I got to meet Jet. That's all I was.
That's true. Yeah, I mean,
who's like
the moral of the story?
Who shot like, my shot, man? I tried.
Wow.
Who was like the rudest person you ever interviewed?
Do you know, I've been all right with people being rude. We've had like weird ones. So we interviewed Justin Bieber quite early on in his career. He's maybe 17 or 18. Mm. So this is post baby, but before the cool stuff came out afterwards. And we'd heard he could solve a Rubik's Cube. This is kind of cool. Why don't we give him a Rubik's Cube whilst we do the interview? Stupid idea. You basically just given a child a toy and then asked for their undivided attention. So they're trying to interview me. So like, you know, whatever, trying to fix this because he's now committed to fixing this Rubik's Cube. We talked a little bit earlier about not meeting your heroes. I met Richard Ayoade.
I said Bieber was
I should have never met Bieber. Fucking Rubik's Cube. I met Richard Ayoade, really, really nice guy.
Was that the brother from Garth Marenghi?
Yeah, that's right. Do you know, almost no one knows about Garth Marenghi.
We'll talk about that later. We'll talk about that one.
I named my production company, it's called Dark Place Productions.
Wow.
After this obscure fucking television show that five people know about. So I'd met him and he'd just come from this really highbrow Radio 4 interview about this new film he directed. The first thing he said to me when he comes to the studio, he went, I've been up all night with the shits. I really don't want to do this interview. You're just listening to BBC Radio 1. My guest today is Richard Ayoade. He just wasn't up for any fun and games.
No hijinks.
No
hijinks.
And I've tried to deal with that is it was just a moment that happened. I'm not going to let it skew any of that, you know, my admiration for his work. It was, he had an off day and it was just an unfortunate thing. I remember asking Idris Elba about the James Bond thing. Yeah. And he was almost some guy from Game of Thrones. And I was 100% honest about this interview. When we started, I said, look, I'm super excited to meet Idris. But with this other guy, I can't even remember his name. I'm like, look, not that I'm
how tall was
excited.
He?
I can't remember.
It wasn't the midget.
No, it no, wasn't. It no, not Peter Dinklage. Yeah, I would have been excited to meet him. They done a film recently, something about something in Brussels, or it's not important. But I'd said to him, I'm not as excited to meet you as I am to meet Idris.
Right? I know.
It's a bad. In hindsight, it's a bad way to start an interview. It's a bad way to start an interview.
I thought you were saying you were talking to your producer, or you said to the geezer like. But I'm not that excited.
Like, there's two ways you can say that. I didn't say I'm not that excited to meet you. I said, look, it's insane. Not that I'm not excited to meet you. I'm just more excited to meet Idris.
Yeah, yeah.
So we kind of hit.
But if that was me, I'd be like, bruv, I understand.
Yeah, that's yeah, totally. And I think that's he did, Idris. But his ego was still a little bit hurt because, you know, Game of Thrones, he's used to people. Oh my God, Game of Thrones. And I watch it, so it's whatever. So I'd really hit it off with Idris, talking about music, and I tried to be a little bit sly. And then, again, in hindsight, thinking this was such a dumb question to ask. He's been asked a million times. He's not going to give me a new answer to it. But I'm thinking, this is my chance. I'm going to be an in-depth journalist. I'm going to ask him some shit. So I'd said to him something like, or is his powers, or what's it like being friends with the next James Bond? Thinking, ooh, my edgy question. I'm finally going to get the answer out of him. And he just completely cut the flow and just went, what? No. And I tried to say it. You felt the atmosphere get sucked out of the room. Yeah, you felt it just went. He just went, what? Oh. Nah, I'm not here to talk about any of that. It's just like,
did they change your show schedule after that? They were like, you could have the morning, mate.
I've never had an interview since.
One shot.
And I was thinking, oh no, I bet after this interview, right, before that question, he was going to go, Dev, let's swap numbers. We're going to be mates. And I ruined it with that one question. I don't know. But you learn, don't you? You learn.
Exactly.
You come out of something like that and you think, all right, yeah, I'm not.
And you know what? More than anything else, is something I speak about so much. It's about picking up on the vibe. 100% is about getting the cues of the vibe. It's not even about things that people say or do. It's you can look someone in the face and go, oh, actually, I'm not going to say that to them, man. Because I'm not going to get anything from them.
Yeah.
But listen, you know what? I think we've it's fucking been sick.
How long have we been on?
Seb can tell us.
That's crazy.
Oh, I mean, that's beautiful.
That's crazy.
Thank you both for coming on. Thanks for trying podcast. It's been magnificent. It's going to be difficult to edit anything out. big thank you to Rowan and Dev, both from Don't Flop.
I am now. Cheers, man.
Fun. Big thank you. Yeah. Big up, everyone. I'm going to clap.
That's fine.
You have been listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 16. Big, big thank you to my guests, Dev and Big shout out to Seb White for recording the show. Thank you to you. Do not forget to review and share this shit and blah, blah, blah. You know this already. I'm not going to repeat it. Big up yourselves. I'll be back next month. And more importantly, if you like the music on the intro and you like the music that I'm talking over right now, go to Spotify, type in The Last Skeptic. I've got a playlist of all my best beats and all that shit, and you can find loads of shit that I've done on there. Go listen to it. Do me a favour, put some like literal pence in my pockets. Let's do this.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.